going deep today. We're going to talk about distance today. We're going to talk about deception today. Deception and dirty deeds. Those are things that we don't teach at any other workshops because sometimes people use them for the wrong reasons. But since you're all enlightened, we can teach them. We can be trusted with them. I don't teach those at any other that we do our persuasion 3 days. We don't teach those things. Dirty deeds, especially the deception part, is we're going to teach you how to find out if people are lying to you, they're indifferent. That's what we're doing today. Now, how many of you know what dissonance is? Heard that term? It's also used in music, dissonance. What is that? We're going deep. Dissonance is one of those things that you're like, wow, that's cool. What was that? What just happened there? What's that? It fights like inside or what's that? Go ahead. It could be a dissonance is two chords that don't go together in music. So yeah, okay, there you go. That's part of it. Part of it is that we have what we call our cognitions, which is our beliefs and our attitudes and the commitments we make. When we do something against our belief, we feel dissonance. It's like a rubber band stretching inside of us. It feels awkward. It's uncomfortable. We don't like it. We can't live with it. And we do strange things. We have these knee-jerk reactions. And this is true when you're talking to someone. They have a belief that they're a good decision maker. They're getting close to buying the house. That rubber band kind of stretch. And when you cut a stretched rubber band, what happened? Yeah, it's going to come back to get you. Just like if someone came up to you and said, you know, I really want you to help me out. I'm trying to lose weight. And you come home and they've just eaten 12 Krispy Kreme donuts. And you say, hey, well, what are you thinking? And then what you need to do, you need to duck. Have you ever approached somebody and it wasn't your fault, but you got attacked? That's dissonance. So basically what you can do with dissonance, you have to understand it too, but you can also use it in persuasion to help people persuade themselves. That's your goal through this section, is to help people persuade themselves. How can you understand dissonance? Where can we go with dissonance? So the question of the day is it easier for people to change their beliefs? Or is it easier for people to change their actions? Well, we're not talking about values. Now, value is something that's really ingrained, like a religion or charity giving back. We're just talking about beliefs. For example, let me give you an example. You are working at home. Your son or daughter comes into your home office, and there's a stapler. And they say, isn't that stapler from work? Now, your belief is what? You shouldn't steal. Here's a stapler. Your son or daughter says, well, wait a minute, isn't that stealing? Oh, there we go. This is what we do. Instead of admitting that you're a thief, you change and take it back and change. So you adjust the belief. So I've been borrowing it for 20 years. Dude, I feel better. What else do we say? You know, and I do a little work at home, too. And they have so many, and they don't give me enough money. And we say, how good we are at this? So we have these beliefs. And part of it, too, is getting commitments. One thing you want to know when in the persuasion cycle, you want to get as many yeses as possible. Yeses increases commitment, increases compliance. Just like when an encyclopedia salesperson knocks on your door, this is how they train them. First question is, easiest to the hardest, and they're all yeses, do you live here? Yes. Do you love your children? Yes. Do you value education? Yes. But it's easiest. You never, in persuasion, you always try not to get the no. It's kind of like a roadblock sometimes in persuasion. You always want to get the yeses and understand their beliefs. For example, you are good people. You are enlightened. You're up late at night. Couldn't sleep. You turn on the TV and there's a commercial for children in Africa or South America and they need your help. It's just $1 a day. Please help. Now, your belief is you're a good person. Your belief is you're a charitable person. The rubber band stretches. You're feeling a little tension because you want to help out. But then what is some of the knee-jerk reactions we say so we feel better and if we don't donate? Well, I know you're good at this. Yeah, other people are doing it. And it could be a scam. Right? What are you saying? I donate to other places and they take care of that. Oh, you bet. What else do we say? Yeah, there's children right in my neighborhood that are hungry. I should help them. And only probably, I've heard that 97% goes into someone's pocket. Most of the money won't make it there anyway. You see what we do? And this is what your prospect, your client, your patient does sometimes when they're thinking about your product or service, because their belief is that they make good decisions. I had a university class once. We divided up into groups, and they were doing tests on dissonance. One group did research, and it was like 96%, between 96 and 97% of people believe you should wash your hands after the restroom. Okay? Now, is that true? Do they do it? We know what their belief is. We're going to be starting on page 36 here in a second. 37. So, what they did is they were camping out in the university library restrooms. Okay, they're hiding in the stall, waiting for someone not to wash their hands. I don't know why they chose this. And then someone wouldn't wash their hands. They would follow them out into the hallway and say, "Wait, stop! You forgot to wash your hand." Now, are they changing a belief or are they changing an action? Most of them are beliefs. So what happened? What did they do? It was amazing. A lot of them, "Call security, pervert, this guy's following me." Or they would say, we heard strange things like, "Well, you just didn't see me." They were in denial, obviously. Or they blamed and attacked the other person. Some people said, "Well, the germs are so strong now that it just doesn't really matter. That's what my professor said." Or, "No, you only wash your hands before you eat. That's the only time you need to wash your hands." Some went back and did. So it's just interesting when we study human nature and why we do what we do and how we rationalize the different things. I took my wife on a cruise to Bermuda. Has anybody been to Bermuda? Beautiful island. And here's the interesting thing. My belief is you shouldn't eat after 7 o'clock. You should exercise every day. You shouldn't, and that's my belief. So all of a sudden we go on vacation. How do we adjust that belief? How do we change that belief? It's not, "We're vacation. We're in Vegas. I can go to all-you-can-eat buffet and have 4 plates and not respect myself in the morning." What else do we say? "Well, we're on vacation, so calories don't count. I'll lose the weight after vacation. I've even lost 5 pounds before a cruise, so I'd break even." And we've paid for it, and if I don't eat it, they're going to throw it away. And I'm on a cruise, I need 7 meals a day. And darn it, I'm going to stay up till midnight for the midnight dessert buffet, even though I'm tired and I'm not hungry, but I'm going to eat it. Isn't that kind of what we do sometimes? So one time, and at the time this made perfect sense. This is a perfect example of dissonance. We came ashore. We went to shore. We came back. It was about 3 o'clock. We changed our clothes. Yeah. Justification and rationalization is one way we get past dissonance. And I'm going to give you the 6 forms, and that is one of them. So it is very, very close. So we're sitting there. I said, "It's 3 o'clock. I said, I'm going to go get something to eat." And she looks at me and says, "You hungry?" I'm like, "Well, no, but that's what you do. You're on a cruise." She said, "Well, why don't you go running or exercise or something?" She said, "I'm going to go do some aerobics." She said, I'm going to go running. So I decided I'm going to go 3 miles. I went to the top of the ship. You know those tracks on the top of the ship? It's like, 107 laps per mile, some really small track. So I committed myself to go 3 miles. That was my commitment, and I keep my commitment. So I started running. 10, 20 laps, and then there's this person, and I kept passing the back of the ship, and something smelled really good. It was the hamburger shack with the french fries and the hamburgers and the hot dog. I'm like, "Wow. No, I got to keep going." But then the person jogging in front of me after 3 or 4 laps sat down and got a hamburger. Wait a minute. What did I say then? "Yeah, they can do it. I can." I'm like, no. So my wife still doesn't know this, but what happened is I kept running. I had about 10 laps left. And at the time, this made perfect sense to me. This was a perfect justification. I stopped, got a hamburger and fries, and walked the remaining 10 laps. Well, I ate my burger and fries because I was going to break even. And it made sense, didn't it? And we do these strange things, and this is what your prospects do, and that's what we need to understand as we go through this process. So let me go through the different areas of dissonance. All right, there we go. Mental consistency is what we need to have. The first thing people do, aren't we? We are on page, 37, is that correct? Okay. Is the denial. You deny there's a problem. You attack the person, you demean the source, well, they don't know what they're talking about. So if your belief, do you know anybody that their belief is that they shouldn't be late, but they're always late? So if they're in some type of denial and you say, "Well, you're late, you're 30 minutes late." Denial would be, "Well, no, it's the first time in months. And who are you to judge me? You've been late before." Is that kind of what happens? So they're kind of putting it onto you. So that's the first one. The second one is the reframe, where you change the meaning, you change the understanding. modify the thinking. If somebody's 10 minutes late, they could say, no, you just don't understand. It's socially acceptable to be 10 minutes late. That's okay. You just don't know the social etiquette. We'll go through these. I'll give you an example. Like foreclosure, we'll take your product. We'll get there. It'll start making more sense. Yeah. Well, I guess it's mental congruency. Yeah, I guess you could say that. Sure. You could say that. Yeah. And they get that tension. You can use it. You have to be aware of it as a persuader because it could go against you, but you could also use it to help persuade. Then there's the search, where you're looking for someone else who's doing it. You're seeking support. You're discrediting the source. Well, President Clinton was always 30 minutes late, and that was okay. If other people do it, it's okay. That becomes searching for somebody. Then there's the separation. You compartmentalize. No, I just need to be time for work, not personal things. It's okay here, but not here. Other people should obey the laws, but I don't need to. It doesn't matter what you do in your private life, it's your public life. That's compartmentalization. That's a separation. Next one we have is the rationalization. Find excuses, you justify the behavior. I was late because of the traffic, it wasn't fair. Yeah. Right here? Compartmentalize and ignore. All right. Yeah, the traffic was my fault because of this, because of that. And modify. And you're going to see this in every aspect of life. You're going to see yourself doing this every day. Modify is, you know what? I am late a lot. I need to fix that. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. How can I change that? I need to change it. I need to fix this. I need to buy your product. I need to use your product. And then we'll go through some examples here. Okay, we're good? So the rubber band. Let's say we've been on too many cruises, and you go to the doctor's office, and you're sitting there on the parchment paper, they've taken the blood, and you're sitting there, and the doctor comes in with a long look on her face, and says, I'm worried about your blood pressure, I'm worried about your cholesterol. Commit to me right now, no more fatty foods. And what do you say? Okay, doc, you've made a commitment. Your belief is that you keep commitments. And so you go a couple of weeks, and things have been going pretty good. And then you've had a bad day, dude, digging your car, or boss yelled at you, whatever happened, you were mad. You come home, and you open up, nobody's home, you open up the fridge, nothing. You open up the freezer, the light comes on, you hear music, and there's a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And it's calling your name. Check, what flavor is it? Come on, you know. Chunky Monkey? Jerry Garcia? Vanilla Heath Bar Crunch? So you reach for it, okay? You've made that, what happens to that rubber band? It stretches. You can't live with that. And then you go for the first one's denial. That doctor doesn't know what he's talking about. He's kind of fat himself. He's the chunky monkey. Who is he to tell me to lose weight? I heard he was a bad doctor anyway. Whew! And you eat the whole thing. Isn't that what happens? But that's what we do. We can't live with that tension. Or there's the reframe. Well, what the doctor really meant, we're changing the meaning here, what the doctor really meant is burgers and fries. Because that's bad fat. This is milk fat. I'm supposed to drink milk. It has calcium. I need my calcium. Would you want me to get osteoporosis? I have to have my ice cream. Where else am I going to get my calcium? And whew, you eat the whole thing again. Have you ever had a prospect, a patient, a client make up something that you've never said? Didn't you say this? This is the reframe. Didn't you mean this? Oh, this is what I heard. This is a classic reframe. Oh, sorry. Then there's the search. You're looking for someone else that thinks it's okay. Smokers hang out with smokers. This is one of the reasons this happens. It eliminates a lot of the dissonance. So you go to the doctor and you say, you're reaching for that Ben and Jerry's. And you say, well, I was on the internet last night and there's this man that lost 27 pounds on the Ben and Jerry's diet. Yeah, you want that website? I don't know where that website is. But you're like, wow, yeah. You're searching and you find somebody and you feel better about it. Yeah, you have high cholesterol. Maybe that's part of the Atkins diet. Bacon and Ben and Jerry's and you'd be good to go. Then the separation is, well, you kind of compartmentalize. No, that's during the week, not on the weekend. So you kind of compartmentalize. That would be compartmentalized. Then the rationalization. Well, if I do 25 push-ups for every bite I take, then I'll break even and it'll be okay. You see how we do this every day with almost everything? We need to really dig deep and understand exactly how this works. Just like this. Here's a form of dissonance right here. Doctor's office. She says, I have metal fillings in my teeth. My refrigerator max, he pulled me into the kitchen. That's why I can't lose weight. You can see if you want to try that one. So let's go back to this. And let's talk about this. Foreclosure. What type of denial could they be in? Whose fault is it? The bank's fault. My rich uncle Fred wouldn't loan me money. My parents wouldn't loan me money. My wife's not supporting me, or vice versa. The economy's fault. And when someone's in that blame, and you back them in the corner, what happens? They'll snap at you. What could be the reframe on a foreclosure? What the bank really meant, what the bank really is trying to do is what? Yeah, they're just trying to get more money. They're just trying to scare me. They're not going to put me and my four children on the street. It's just a scare tactic. That's all it is. You've seen this, haven't you? I see the heads going up and down. The search. Well, my Uncle Fred said his neighbor's home was going to foreclosure for 7 years. And they were okay, right? Separation? What could be the separation? Yeah. We're going to go on the solutions in just a second. We're going to go to solutions with each one of these. I just want to get your minds thinking. The separation. Is there a separation you can think of? You don't necessarily have all of them. The compartment, I have time to fix it. That's where they're like, they're different than other people. That's for other people. That's not for me. It's okay here. It's not okay here. Rationalization. What could be a rationalization when someone's home from a foreclosure? I got sick. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to get another job. Yeah. So you've heard these things before. So why don't I go through each one of these and come up with a solution. When you see this happening, you start studying this material, you see it happening, you know, what's the solution? That's what I want to talk about is the solution. And you identify what is the solution. Let's talk about a few more things and we'll go into solution. Now, part of it, too, is being able to get commitments, get as many yeses as possible. There was a study done on a beach. It was a beach near New York City. This is a really interesting study where there was a couple. You know what a confederate is in the study? Someone that's in on the study? So this person would come to the beach and they'd put down a towel. There's somebody about 5 feet away. They put down a towel and a radio. And they would lay there for about 5 minutes and they'd get up and walk away. Then a confederate, posing as a thief, they were part of the study, would come along, steal the radio, and walk off. So what percent of these people, so they're watching them, this person here has watched a burglary. This is a rubber band stretch a little bit. So what percent of these people are going to risk personal harm to try to stop that thief? It's about 25%. It was 20%, I mean. It's 20%. Now we change it up a little bit. We understand dissonance. We're going to get a commandment. We want to put a towel down, put the radio there. We lay there for 5 minutes. We stand up. We turn to the person and say, what do we ask them? Will you watch my things? Will you watch my things? And they say, yes, that's a commitment. Their belief is they keep their commitments. Here comes the thief. Now what percent is going to risk personal harm? 95%. Isn't that amazing? Just by that one little thing, understanding human nature. Now, Knox and Inkster did a study in Canada at horse racing tracks. Very important to understand about human nature and consumer behavior. People were in line with their money to place a bet on a horse. So the question is, are they more confident before they place the bet, or are they more confident after they place the bet? Very good. It's after. Well, because before you buy a product, you're looking for what? Everything that's wrong. So just like before you make the final decision, well, what could be wrong? What about this? And this is in your world too. People are looking for everything that's wrong. But once they've mentally decided to do it, then it was the right decision because they make right decisions. And that's what they found with horse racing. Before they placed the decision, they weren't that confident. But when they put the money down, they were confident that they what? They made the right choice. And that goes back to your product or service and vomiting. There's one or two reasons that they want your product or service, right? And your job is to find that. Go to CompUSA and they say, hey, I need a word processing program. What do you have? And they say, well, here's Microsoft Word. Does everyone use Microsoft Word? And they say, sit down, let me tell you everything that it does. How long would you be there? Would you want to buy? And that's what you're doing. Vomiting. So your role is to find the one or two reasons. And so once they've mentally said, hey, I like that one, then everything else is important. Didn't we talk about compensation plans the other day? Network marketing, that people don't understand them. That's why we say, do they need to know a compensation plan in network marketing before they join? Absolutely not. Because if a confused mind says no, they didn't need to know everything. When you buy a VCR or DVD player or TV, do you need to know everything that it does? Yeah, absolutely not. So once you find the one or two reasons, you can fill in the blanks later, but you don't have to know everything. You're over-persuading, you're overselling, you're saying too much. It turns people off. No one likes to be vomited on. That's just what it comes down to. Does that make sense to everyone? So you find those one or two reasons, and you can fill in the blanks later. So then we go to FITD. Now, yesterday was DITF. What did that stand for? Remember? Door in the face, where we start high. This one's foot in the doors, where we start low. This is usually more for commitments. Door in the face is usually more for pricing and contracts. So what we do is we begin with a small request, and then we follow up with a larger request. We're consistent in our behaviors and our actions. Once you get people to do something, second thing's easier, the third thing's easier, the fourth thing's easier. That's why you always start with the easiest things first. Door in the face. Social psychologists, they come up with these fun things. You don't remember that, you just remember how to use it. We'll talk about that. So, well, the foot in the door, we'll talk about it. This is just finding small things lead to bigger things. Like the encyclopedia salesman. You'll get much higher compliance getting two or three yeses than one yes. I'll show you some examples here. Okay, we good? Early morning study. They took college students, and they had a study that was at 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. Now, is that an easy thing for a college student? That's an easy thing for anybody. So they said, we have a study on mental processes this Saturday at 6 o'clock. Can you make it? Will you come? 24% said yes. Now, as we understand foot in the door, let's break it up. Hey, we're doing a study on mental processes. Will you participate? Well, yes. Yeah. It's this Saturday. Are you available? Well, yes. Yeah. It's at 6 o'clock. Will you be there? Yes. It went from 24% to 56% yes. See the difference? A little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. American Cancer Society also did that too. They had a 700% increase in people volunteering and getting donations. You know what they did? They invite people to a party and they say, do you support the American Red Cross? And they say yes, and they give them a little pin to the American Red Cross. And then somebody a week or two later would call them up and ask them if they would donate. 700% increase. Isn't that amazing? Just by that little thing, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. So here's a fill in the blank for you. Small commitments always lead to larger commitments. Written commitments are always more powerful than verbal commitments. Even if you get them to initial it, to okay it, to write it down, even if it's not officially typed up, if you can write it down. So if you don't have a contract with you, what should you do? At that moment, they've agreed. Yeah, that's better than a verbal. Get a napkin, people, let's... I know we're going to write this up officially, but let's just write down what we've agreed to, and you both not sign it, we'll both autograph it or endorse it or okay it, as we verbal package it. That is much stronger. And public commitments are stronger than private commitments. The more people around, the more people you tell at that moment, the stronger that commitment's going to be. So if there's two or three people, have three or four people sign it. However you want to do. That's why when people join weight loss clinics, what's one of the first things they have them do? Well, they sign something. They do all of these. They make the commitments. They sign something. They pay money. And then they're told to tell who? Everybody. Because the more people they tell, that stronger that commitment's going to be. And they've done studies with that before where they have people evaluate the length of a line. Some people would remember in their head. Some people would write it on a scratch pad that was erasable. And some people had to write it down and turn it in. And when they found out later they picked the wrong one, who changed their mind the easiest? Ones that kept it in their mind. They wrote it down. The commitment was there. They didn't change it. So here's the application. Right there at the bottom. Find the cognitions, get a commitment, create dissonance, offer the solution. I think you have that there at the bottom, don't you? Okay. Let's talk about it. How do we do this? So throw out a product to me. What's the product? Fizbo? Toothpaste? Okay, toothpaste. Do you use toothpaste? So you're not brushing your teeth. Is that what you're telling me? Well, first thing I want to do is find your cognitions, find your belief. I would talk to you, ask a few questions, and I'd find out that your belief is you want a charming smile, and then you don't want to have dentures. That's your belief. And then I get a commitment. If I can, you know, show you a way where you can have a smile, attract 32% more women in your life. Are you married? Oh, okay. Well, no, that won't be a good example. If you were single, 32% more women in your life, would you be interested? And I said, well, if you don't, if you keep on the path of not brushing your teeth, what's going to happen? Okay. Bad breath, you're going to repel people, you're going to lose your teeth, that causes the rubber band to stretch a little bit, right? You create a little distance, and then I offer the solution, which is the product, the toothpaste. Foreclosure. Fizbo, let's do a foreclosure. You find, you ask them some questions, you find out their belief is they want to take care of their family, their belief is they want to get back on track, their belief is they want to save their credit. Great. Then you get a commitment. Well, I can show you three ways you can save your house. Is this something you want to do right now? Is this something you're interested in? Well, yes. Okay, if we don't do anything in the next 7 days, what's going to happen? You're going to lose your home, which, does that cause a rubber band to stretch? And then your solution is always what? Your product or service. Well, this is how we're going to fix it. Is that making sense? You good? Anybody another product you want to throw out? What's that? A sofa. You guys just tested me today. A sofa, huh? Well, you find their belief. Why would somebody come into a furniture store looking for a sofa? Old one doesn't match? Or that judgmental Aunt Edna's coming over and she's going to make fun of your couch and you know she's going to judge you. So you find out that's why they're there. You find that's their belief. They don't want to be embarrassed about their old couch that pokes people in their rears when they sit on the spring, right? So you get a commitment. So, well, I can show you a way to redecorate your family room with a great couch that looks beautiful economically and in your budget. Is this something that you'd be interested in? Well, yeah. Okay. Well, if you don't get anything today, Aunt Edna's coming tomorrow. If you don't get anything today, what's going to happen when Aunt Edna comes over? She's going to judge you and do this. Does that cause a rubber band to stretch? That's why they're there. The solution is, here's a four-piece set. Here's the payment plan. This is something that you can do. Boom. Get it today and we'll deliver it today. Or we'll call, we'll get rid of Aunt Edna for you. Either way. We're good on that? Does that make sense? Okay, so, all of them. We're going to go over the solutions. Let's see if we can, yeah. You want to stretch the rubber band a little bit. Are you going to, Yeah, this one's pain. Most people are motivated by desperation. What's going to happen if you don't, if we don't change this? What's going to happen? You kind of create that internal pressure. So you're helping them out. They're persuaded. You're helping them persuade themselves. So they're feeling the pressure. They go, if I don't make a change, this is. But you want to get as many yeses as possible. Yeah. Yeah. You're asking questions, find their beliefs, what they're looking for. You let them. Well, you let them. You with your question, they're feeling the pain. Does that make sense? That's that internal pressure. You can. There's two things here. It's very helpful to persuade to create dissonance if you're not getting anywhere. And then number two, just recognizing it so you can have a solution for it. Because sometimes if they're in denial and they're blaming other people, what are you going to do? And that's what we're talking about right now, is how to solve that. Okay? Yeah, it's there with their beliefs. You're dialing it up a little bit, helping them make a decision. Because if foreclosure, if they're in denial, if they're blaming other people and they don't do anything, what's going to happen? They're going to lose everything. So, pretty much. So I put up kind of a recap over here, and then we're going to go over these different ones. Denial. What's happening with denial? So here are the solutions to denial. And people react differently. When people tell you that you're wrong or tell you you're a bad driver, how do most people react? What's that? So are you. Isn't it interesting? Everyone's a good driver, and when someone honks at you, you get mad at them. But when they cut you off, you get mad at them. But if you cut somebody off, how do you rationalize that? How do you get past that? Yeah, they're going too slow, and well, they're in my blind spot, and it's their fault. It's just kind of interesting how we do things. So blame is really interesting in how people get in denial. I was driving down through this school zone and didn't realize I was going very fast. And I pulled up to a red light, and this man says, he's doing this to my window. So I rolled down my window, and he just let me have it. Yelled at me. He was using profanity. How could I speed through a school zone? Just let me have it. So the natural response is what? The bird, other things, yell back. And when we can understand that, I just said, I apologize, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was speeding. But most people, when they don't like that feeling, and they'll attack back. That's what's happening here. Very few people just own up to it. So the question is, FITD, we talked about getting small increments, getting small yeses. Very important when people are in denial. Personal discovery. Never back them in a corner. Never tell them that they're wrong. Let me explain personal discovery. What you're doing as a persuader, when someone's in denial and they're in blame, and you tell them that they're wrong, and you tell them that they're this, they're going to snap back at you. So your job is to ask the questions through a road of personal discovery to help them realize for themselves that what? They blew it. They need to take ownership. They need to make changes and help them with your questions realize for themselves that they have an issue here that they need to solve. Denial is not going to solve the problem. So let's go into this. Good? Never back into a corner. This is another one of those things that says compromise. Let's agree to respect each other's views no matter how wrong yours may be. That's how most people are. Because I do not blame others for my mistakes, I blame the same people every time. We see that too. So let's look at the blame cycle that we have so we can understand it. An event happens in your life. You lose your job. You accept it. All right, I lost my job. This is the right way to handle it. Okay, I lost my job. Maybe I can get a better job. Maybe it's time to be an entrepreneur. Maybe I can start my own business. How can I grow? How can I grow from this? What can I learn from this? I'm not going to become bitter. I'm going to become a better person. Then I start to see results. Personal growth. I'm reading more books. I'm going to more seminars. I'm changing my life. I'm being an entrepreneur. My business is starting to make money. And then you see success. All from that event. That's what successful people do, which is not the majority of the population. So we accept it, grow, results, and success. Now on the other side of that cycle is the opposite, which you're seeing probably in a foreclosure. You guys got this one? Good? Right. Then there's you lose your job, and then who do you blame? Government, neighbor, taxes, parents, that mean boss, the coworkers that conspired against you, the economy, it's not fair. Boom. You rationalize how you're going to get back, what's going to happen. You have resentment, and then there's failure. Because it's not your fault. You never take ownership, it's never your fault, and you're never going to fix yourself. And that's what happens. That's kind of the cycle that we see. We're going to talk about resentment later. Where does the resentment come from? The word sentir, which means what? To feel. So if you're resenting, re-feeling, what's happening? The day you were fired, you're rehashing it, you're refeeling it, you're mad, it's a never ending cycle for me. Okay. And when you push someone too far, you see that? This is a sign at Walgreens, an actual sign. It says combination to safe. 26, 89, 14. Somebody got fired, it wasn't their fault, they were mad, what happened? Boom. The combination to safe is on the sign. I was wondering how long it was there. Isn't that amazing? One last jab because it wasn't your fault. Yeah, I wonder how long that was up. Yeah, they scored it out because people do things it wasn't their fault. So, questions. You need to learn and write down questions ahead of time. They create mental involvement. Every time I ask a question, is this true or false? Every time I ask a question, it gets answered. Either mentally, right? It can be answered in their head. It just creates mental volume or out loud. So questions are very, very powerful. It guides the conversation. So we want the easiest questions first. Get a track record. Get things going. So what if you had, they didn't have any questions. What could you do? What's that? Ask them out loud, or this is the question I usually get. And it finds out their needs. Questions. We've been studying top persuaders versus average persuaders. It's around three times. Top persuaders ask three times more questions than average persuaders. Remember? Doctor. Diagnose. You're diagnosing. You're a consultant. You want to know more. You're asking questions. You're not assuming that your product's just going to work for them. That's where the top persuaders really come out ahead. Three times more questions from a top persuader to an average persuader. You're getting their story. You're finding their pain. You're finding their belief. Now, here's a question. If you already know the answer to the question, should you ask the question? Yeah, because they need to verbalize it. Sometimes they just don't understand why they're feeling upset or angry or feeling this distance. Ask the question. That's how they train lawyers. Do lawyers ever ask a question they don't know the answer to? They're not supposed to, because sometimes they could really go after them. So be careful with some of your questions. Now, there's open-ended questions and there's closed-ended. Which one's better? You probably should use both in your arsenal, because of course you always want to get the yeses. But if you're not sure where to go, an open-ended question gets a lot more information from them. Not if you're listening and talking about it, not usually. I mean, some of those emotions will come back, but we're going to talk about how to handle those emotions. That could happen, not usually. So the questions you have in your book already is, well, what do you think about? How do you feel about? We talked about yesterday, what's important about? What's the most important thing about saving your home? What's the most important thing about having a business at home? Probing, you're asking questions. You also have the consequences down there. What is the worst thing that can happen? What is the cost of not making the change? Careful about backing people into a corner and help making them right wrong decisions. So questions about questions. Any questions? Questions about questions? You all right? You could sometimes if they didn't really want to bring it up and talk about it. Yeah, as long as you can get them talking, opening up, and you're being sincere, and you're listening. Well, sure, foreclosure. How could you back someone up foreclosure? You knock on the door, how could you back them into a corner? Yeah. You're stupid. Everyone knows you don't pay your house, but you're going to get kicked out. Didn't you go to school? You lying to me? Why are you lying to me? I'm here trying to help you, and you're lying to me? Those are the type of things that get people to react. Yeah. Well, the consequences could, but if you ask the question, they come up with the consequences. You don't tell them. You say, well, what's going to happen in 2 weeks? And so they're coming up with, they're saying it, not you. If you say it, then they're going to resist. It's human nature. Now there's the reframe. How do we handle the reframe? Remember, we're changing our thinking. We're changing our understanding. Here are the solutions. Fear, this is the type of place where you can use fear. Have a place we talk about paint the picture and showing both sides. Fear. Now, fear is an interesting thing. Do you use logical thought with fear? It's tough sometimes. If your 3-year-old thinks there's a monster underneath the bed, can you use logic? It's tough, isn't it? Well, then you turn the lights on, you show them there's nothing underneath the bed, they say, well, duh, Dad, they're not there when the lights are on. Okay. I had one dog, monsters in the closet of the bed that just, she couldn't sleep. In fact, I bought some of the cans of air. I just put a little cover, put monster spray on it. So we just spray it at night, and that was just much easier, and she'd just go right to sleep. So sometimes you have to look at some strange solutions. Yeah, if anybody wants to go on me and start a company called Monster Spray, let me know. So fear. This is the time and place they can use fear because they're, well, it's okay because of this. They've changed the meaning. It doesn't matter. The bank's just really trying to scare me here. You want to paint the picture. Remember the stories. We're taking the picture. This is what's going to happen. And show both sides. Both sides of the issue. So let's explain it. Talk about fear first. Fear is anxiety or tension caused by danger or apprehension. It can be real. It can be imagined. That's fear. They're changing the meaning here. All right. We good? Smoking may kill us. On the other hand, the non-smokers are inside working themselves to death. Another form of getting past the dissonance. That's why it's okay. So, proper dose of fear. If it's too small, nothing's going to happen. If it's too big, it triggers resistance. a lot of the drug campaigns and tobacco campaigns and alcohol campaigns. So let's say Philip Morris, they say, well, we'll put a campaign on to stop teenagers from smoking. Does it increase smoking or decrease smoking? What's that? It increases, doesn't it? All the alcohol tends to increase it. Especially a lot of times when they show you, for example, when you're in driver's ed, remember that movie, was it Red Pavement? What was it called? Have you seen this movie? Is it Red something like that? Where they would show accidents, bodies on the ground, bodies laying on the floor, telling the teenagers, look, you have to be safe drivers or you're going to die. What's that? Death on the highway. Signal 30. These scary things, and when it's too much, it has the opposite effect. That's what we're finding. Just like they don't believe it. Just don't believe it. You have to have the proper dose. You always want to give options, too. When someone's in a reframe, you want to give options. Most humans want options. If you tell them what they need to do, even though they need to do it, they're going to resist. So you want to give two or three different options. You have to be careful with options, though. They've done tests with jam. Well, here's 27 flavors. Tell me which one's the best. And perfume. Can you smell 27 different types of perfume and figure out which one's best? They try to keep it to what, two or three? Other than that, you just go nuts. So two or three options. There was this lady, she wouldn't take her medication. Wouldn't take her medication. Her family was upset, she wouldn't take her medication because her doctor said she had to take it in the morning. She didn't want to. So they went to another doctor. The doctor says, pretty simple. Do you want to take it in the morning or the evening? Does it matter? Does it matter to the doctor, does it? Both are good options. Well, I'll take it in the evening. She was able to choose even though both options were good. Does that make sense? So you want to create options that any one they pick is good for you. But they had an option. They feel more autonomous to make a decision. So you give them two or three options and each option is good for you. Does this make sense to you? So you choose these different options. You want to do it today or tomorrow? I mean, at least there's an option there. They all win for you. And you let them choose. That's what we did with an investment counselor. How many types of mutual funds are there? 3,287? You just say that or do you know? there's thousands of them. It depends on the day. So this investment counselor person would come in and they say, look, here's a list of the 70 mutual funds I've picked for you. And what do people do? It's too much, it's overwhelming, they turn off, they're confused, versus just say, no, pick two or three. Here's the three that are best for you, choose one, or choose two. And you get much, much higher compliance and more persuasive that way. Now there's the search. We call social validation. So if they're looking to other people, they're looking for social validation. We've talked about testimonials. They do not accept you as the expert. Or they don't think you have the authority.